Okay, so we are on, what is this, lesson six, right? Yes, lesson six, the training begins. So continue to think about the things that you grumble about because, and here's the thing, it's so easy to give a huge lesson and learn so much, and it's so easy to just put it in your head. It's so easy to do that. So I really, really want us to concentrate on your own grumbling as you go through the lesson so that it just bypasses your head and it goes right to your heart and you realize, wow, this is what I'm doing. This is what God is doing here. So really, really try to think about that and listen with your heart here. So we couldn't possibly need more coffee. In the other, both of them are gone? And then there's another one over there?
Where?
In the white? Oh. Three pots cannot possibly go in that.
Yeah, we didn't know that one was gone.
Oh, I didn't think, we'd never done two before. Sorry. I'm just watching all this activity thinking.
Are you recording yourself?
I am. okay, so what has God done so far? We've kind of gone through our verse. I am the Lord. I will bring you out. He's already done that, right? He's brought them out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. He has delivered them from their bondage, right? And he said, and I will also redeem you. So he's taken them from a worthless place to a place of worth because he says, you are now my people. He, remember, he separates. He shows that with that fire in the cloud separating, you're mine now. And now he's saying, and I will be your God. This is where he's at. So he's done all these wonderful things. He's begun this process. And now he says, I'm going to show you that I am your God. And notice, the interesting thing is that he says, I am the Lord. And so many of us, when we say the verse, we always say, I am the Lord, your God. But he starts with, I'm the Lord. They need to know that. Because it's a process for them to get to, I am the Lord, your God. And here's where he says, and I will be your God. And you will know, and I've listened to all of you, and the inflection is never there. And I'm thinking, now the inflection is going to be there. And I will be your God, and you will know that I am the Lord, your God. Your God. I am not any longer just the Lord, but I am your God. And the deal is that they've been in Egypt all this time with all these other gods. And now he's saying, I've taken you away from there, and I'm going to begin the training of how I'm going to be your God, your only God. You've been used to being able to have a lot of gods. So your tendency is going to be, come out, oh, sure, you're going to be our God, that's great. But we'll still keep several other gods as well, right? Because this is what we've always known, is there's lots of gods, and so, oh, that's nice, you're going to be our God, and we'll have all these other gods. These kind of safety nets, which is exactly what we do, and it actually comes out in our grumbling. It's this indication of the fact that we have actually more than one God. And what he is saying, and he is trying to settle for them, is I'm going to train you in understanding, learning, knowing without a doubt that I am your God, your only God. So this is what he's going to do. And really for the rest of the wilderness journey, this is going to be his whole idea, is I'm going to be your only God. But it's going to take a lot of training because he's going to have to get rid of, first of all, the way that we think that we can have lots of gods. We've got to get rid of that and in the meantime place himself as the only God and show them that. Does this make sense? So this is where he's going with them as we open up this this first chapter here.
That reminds me of the meekness.
Yeah.
That we talked about strength under control.
Exactly.
And having an authority. And
yes.
We did it in our Sunday school this last week, and it was like the first time I'd ever heard it. It just hit me in a new way that I'm under his authority. I know that sounds really stupid, but it just made me think of every decision being under his authority.
Yes.
How likely and how prone I am to be under my own authority.
Yes, exactly. And that's really what this is all about, is him training us little by little that, first of all, he is the only authority that gives life. And you can choose to be under all sorts of other gods, basically our own gods, But those authorities are only going to give you death. Mm-hmm. So let's start the training early. Remember, we're talking about an infant here. Remember, this is how God has done it. He's already taken them out of the womb. He's brought them home. He said they're mine. But now he's going to train them, and he's given them a rhythm. Remember, we talked about the rhythm last week. And it's really important as we see the rhythms that God puts in everything that he has created, in nature, in us. He wants us to be settled in that rhythm. And we talked about grumbling interrupting that rhythm. So he wants us to see what grumbling does other than just interrupt the rhythm. The fact that they are still grumbling at this point, what have they just been through? They were released from bondage after 400 years, miraculously. They were given all this great stuff. They walked through the Red Sea, however that happened. All the plagues that they weren't done. The Red Sea, the fact that they were, they've already been fed water once, right? They had bitter water made sweet because a tree was thrown in it. They've had manna come down from heaven every day. They are still collecting manna. And yet, they still grumble. They're still at that point of grumbling. Because of that, that's an indication that they do not really believe that he is their one and only God. They do not believe it fully in their heart. Because their belief is based on what? What they see. Their belief is based on what they see. So we've already seen that. And he knows he must train out of them that. He must train that out of them and train them to see faithfully, to see him as God alone. We know from the Exodus 17:7, when they say, as they're grumbling, what they've said to Moses is, well, is the Lord with us or not? And this is one of those, what did you just say? All God has done for you, but here's the thing. The first thing God said was, I'm going to tell you my name. My name is I Am. I am always with you. I am always working out covenant for you. I am the Lord. And they go, well, are you with us or not? And of course, they don't even ask him that. They ask Moses that. Is the Lord with us or not? And they use actually his name. Is the Lord, the one who is working out covenant all the time, is he with us or not?
But we still use with us to denote going our way.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly.
Right. With us as everything went.
Right, exactly, right, right. Oh, God is with us, God is
right,
with us.
Right.
Yeah, God is with you, always.
Right.
And when you had that awful thing happen to you, God was with you. And he was using it to work out covenant. So he knows that they're not there. And we know they're not there. 1 Corinthians 10, we're going to spend a little bit of time in there. So I'd like you to open up 1 Corinthians 10. Absolutely, absolutely. And when I give you some samples, I think we'll see as a parent how that frustration happens. But it's not frustration of, do it my way. It's, oh, I'm doing good for you. Please receive this. Please receive this. Okay, I'd like someone to read 1 through 14.
I will.
Okay. Diane, what version do you have?
New King James.
Okay.
1 Corinthians 10, right?
1 yep.
14. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry.
Okay. That's talking about exactly where we are right now, and it continues on in Exodus. So we know from this commentary in Corinthians what they're doing here. They all went through all the miracles. The biggest miracles in the Bible, they've all experienced and gone through. And yet, it says they continue to sin against him, to rebel.
It's because of idolatry.
And it's because of idolatry, exactly, which is exactly where we are. Grumbling is idolatry. That's what we're going to look at. They did not, and it said we should not. These are examples to us so that we don't grumble, that we, and in the NAS it says, that we do not crave evil things. And this means something completely different than you think it does. Completely different. Flee from idolatry. So those are the warnings here. God is showing us what we're like in the Israelites. And he's saying, you don't crave evil things. This isn't good for you. Flee from idolatry. They're the same thing. And as we look at the grumbling, this is exactly what he's talking about. Psalm 78 is also another, it's interesting that Scripture reiterates the story over and over again. And Psalm 78 is another picture of the Exodus. And so all of 78 is beautiful, and it talks about every miracle that God did and every reaction that Israel had over it. So we'll probably refer to Psalm 78 several times, but let me just read a few of them here. They forgot his deeds and his miracles that he had shown them. He divided the sea. He led them with a cloud. He split the rocks in the wilderness and gave them abundant drink. Yet they still continued to sin against him, to rebel. And in their heart, they put God to the test. They did not believe in God and did not trust in his salvation. So when I say they don't believe, even though last week it said, oh, they now believed in God and believed in Moses. But that belief was based on sight. And Psalms tells us they weren't believing. This was not true belief. They saw, oh, he did this for us. Just like Sherilyn had said, oh, this happened. Oh, so God was with us. That's exactly what they're doing. Exactly what we do as well.
Well, and I just realized that do not put God to the test is actually means don't be transactional.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly what
because
it means.
If you say, yes. You know, oh, God is with me and, you know, my candidate won or something, whatever
right.
it is.
Right.
And then so
mm-hmm.
your candidate doesn't win, God's not with
exactly.
me.
You
know, like,
exactly.
Exactly. God's not with me.
Yep.
That's
right.
the worst
right.
thing.
And that is,
right.
And you know what? That we have struggled so many times when, and it's wonderful to be able to share what God has done. But you need to share it in, you. And this is the thing. We share, God has done this wonderful thing, but we don't go, God has done this really hard thing, and I am so grateful, and he is working. Mm-hmm. We need both.
But you don't know that until after sometimes.
Oh,
but I think you have to be clear in. I
yes.
The hard part.
Well, exactly.
But if you've never walked that way before.
Right.
But
right, see the first
accept that this is what God is doing to them. This is what God is doing with us. He is developing in us eyes of faith, mm-hmm. so that we do eventually come to the point where we come to a hard place and we go, "Wow, God, this is hard. Thank you that you are working covenant." Mm-hmm. The very first time I saw this hard thing, and I think we'll see it a little bit more when we see this grumbling piece. That's what He's working in us. That we don't have to wait until we see it worked out that we believe.
But that's a training, though, to reach that point where you're in the middle of a storm and say, like, I see you, God, and to know that he won't let you fall.
Exactly. Yep.
Because initially, I know for me, when I've been in those tough times, I'm like, well, God's not with me.
That's part of the journey.
It is part of the journey. But we have got to be careful to think that we won't ever get there. Because that's what he expects. That's actually what he is developing and instilling in us. And where the wrath of God comes is when we refuse to let that start being built in us.
When I do think that we get to that point where we're like, okay, God, I'm going to trust you're going to work this all out for the good and I'm not going to fall, when actually it's even beyond that.
Yes, it is beyond
that.
If
I fall,
right.
That's you too.
Yep,
right?
Exactly.
Like you're doing
exactly.
And I'm on
right.
That's the hard part.
It reminds me of when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were going out of
And
they said, you know what? He may save us today, but he may not.
Right.
But there's one thing that Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to know. We only serve one God.
Right.
Right.
And that's that resolution to say,
yep.
I don't know what his plan is, but I know that I only serve him.
And that is a perfect example of, see, in the midst, we can be able to say,
absolutely,
he is working here.
Do you know what's freaked me out since I did that grace study? Is that, like, I feel like I don't get really worked up about tragedy anymore. Like, and it's like people expect me to, and I'm like,
it's
so
great.
They have cancer. Or like, so that just happened in that part of the world. Like, it's like I almost, like, it's weird. It's like this weird
shift.
Place to be. This weird shift of, like, everybody around me kind of freaking out. And I, your marriage is in trouble.
This is a grace.
Right. This is a grace. God's in that.
Yep.
And it's a weird place to be because it isn't what everybody's.
And what does God say? My ways look foolish to the world. That looks ridiculous.
Right.
That looks ridiculous.
When you see someone in it, I don't mean like praise it and pride, but my mother-in-law with her husband, I was walking through, you know, the 8th treatment of chemo, and my parents on the other end saying, well, she's pushing it. What kind of person goes to chemo and then a sax game? I said, Mom, with us. I said, what a wonderful picture. They are believing, they are staying positive, and it's like, I'm going to call it what it is because let's see that. Let's see it in action. You know, even though I really know that your route would be way different, and it would be probably my instinct at first, because that's part of your raising and your bringing up. It's like, look at, truly, again, this is my mother-in-law, beginning my father-in-law. This is, and to watch her walk through this is just like, is everybody seeing what's going on here? It's beautiful.
Well, I think the hard part, too, is I think now, because Jesus has freed us, we don't see ourselves as people under bondage.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And what's hard is, like, you look at the Israelites and they're like, they were chosen. They were God's people. Like, we are God's people. Yet, God still considers them under bondage, and we have to be aware that, like, our freedom is made perfect when we meet Jesus, but there's still some bondages here.
There's definitely still. And this is the part of his training, is I'm training that out of you.
Right.
So here, he's going to work on the grumbling, because the grumbling actually is one of those basic things that shows that we are still having other gods. And the God is us, by the way.
And we shouldn't be surprised, though, because I always go back to when Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it's not like any of our stuff should be a complete surprise, because he said so plainly, in this world, you will have trouble. And then, of course, he goes on to give the promise about, you know, he's over the world. But, like, how much more plain could you get? Like, your life is not going to be carefree.
Yes.
We're such babies. We want it easy.
Well, we don't want it easy. We want it our way. Okay. So, what we know is they definitely still do not have that truth set in their hearts that he is really God and he is their only God because of their grumbling. We've seen their grumbling here. We also know that without this truth, without living this truth, there is no life. And it says in that passage in 1 Corinthians 10 that they were laid low in the wilderness, which meant they died in the wilderness. They died. They didn't receive life. And remember that everything that happens to them is a picture for us of our lives. So this laid low in the wilderness, there's no life without actually receiving him as your only God. Now, yes, it will still be a process for us. And yes, it will continue to be a process for us, for him to drag out of us those other gods that we have. And he will continue to do it faithfully. And what's really great about God is he does take his time with it. He doesn't all at once say, okay, this is it. No more gods or you're done. He just continues. And he uses our grumbling for that purpose. So we'll see that. And of course, Hebrews 3 again reiterates this story. So we have it over and over and over again about this Exodus. So you can see this is a basic foundational truth that God wants us to know and understand, because it's said over and over again. In Hebrews, it talks about them, and it said that they, the Israelites in the wilderness, tried me by testing me. And they saw my works, and yet they did not know my ways. They shall not enter my rest, because they didn't receive my ways. My rhythms is what he's talking about here. So the grumbling has got to be dealt with. He's got to deal with the grumbling, and this is going to be his training for them, the beginning of his training. So we talked about the grumbling meaning being obstinate. Stop going forward in God's rhythm. That's what grumbling does to us. That's what it is. But if we go back to the 1 Corinthians passage, it says we are not to crave evil. So craving means, obviously, what it looks like, to have affections directed towards something, to long after. But evil things, see, these are not bad things, because they're not wanting like a chocolate cake. They're wanting water. So don't think evil things means bad things. What it means is to retreat from battle. Completely different than what we thought, right? Wow, evil things. Evil things means to retreat from battle. We crave a retreating from battle. We want to not have to battle what? Our flesh. Our idol. We don't want to do that. Exactly. So, does that now put a completely different picture of what he's talking about here? Don't crave evil things. Don't retreat from battling the flesh. You've got to get rid of it. Don't retreat from being an idolater. Fighting that. God wants to bring you to a place of fighting your idolatry. And we don't want to. And how do we do it? By grumbling. Because grumbling brings us back to our idolatry. Grumbling brings us to the place of what we want. Our picture, right? So we see that grumbling is craving the evil things. It's idolatry. Grumbling, all grumbling, is idolatry. It is living by the flesh. Now, we walk in here and we think, well, we all grumble, and you know, it's not good, but could it be that bad? Mm-hmm. And now we go, wait a second. Scripture tells us over and over again, grumbling is idolatry. And God says, I am your God. I am your only God. And I'm going to train you in that. So I'm going to use that grumbling to show you where your idols are. And I'm going to bring you to the battle of that. So when I asked you, what do you grumble most about? This is important for you to know what you grumble most about, because that's where your idols are. And those are the places that God is going to bring you to battle over, so that you get rid of those. So it's really important to hear what you're saying in your head, to hear what you're grumbling about to others, because these are the areas that you're going to have some journeys in with God about this.
Okay, but they didn't want. If they would have grumbled about it differently, like if they would have cried out themselves directly, God, can you provide the water?
That's a different thing, isn't it? Asking for what we need? No problem. In fact, that's what he wanted to do. So before we get there, though, let's look at the grumbling just a little bit more. God intends for us to go forward, right? He intends for us to go forward out of bondage into his presence, into his rhythm. Remember, this rhythm is what makes life shalom, peace, wholeness, this rhythm. And that's what he intends for us to do. letting him be God to us. This is what he's trying to do for them. He's leading them there. And they're grumbling. They don't want to go. They're like, no way, I don't want to go there. I don't want you to be my only God. I want to be my only God. I want to be God. In Egypt, we had lots of God. Why can't we have lots of God here? And really, that's what we're saying when we grumble. I want to have lots of God. I want to have these few other gods. And of course, you, God. Of course, you're my God. But I also have these other little gods. Does this make sense?
But aren't all the other little gods... We want to be God?
Yes. Well, and we're gonna delineate that just so we understand all the pieces of our gods. Our yes, really, we want to be God. But if we are to progress forward, it's going to mean war. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in just a second. I'll give you a good example of it. So when I crave evil things like the Israelites, I desire not to go forward into his presence, into his rhythm, but back to the world's ways, to Egypt's ways. Mm-hmm. I will strive to get what I want. That's back there. Idolaters are slaves to idols. So when I grumble, it's an indication of what I idolize. It's an indication that I'm still a slave. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm still, so, but what God is doing, faithfully doing, is I have taken you out of bondage and you're just living as if you're a slave. I'm trying to tell you you're not, but you're still living like one. So I'm gonna get this out of you. I'm gonna train it out of you. So let's think about this. So so if God has this rhythm, where do battles fit in the rhythm? It seems kind of weird. He's got this rhythm. I don't see battles in here. Let's think back to an infant. So you have an infant, and you know that his rhythm has to include sleep, rest, right? So you're going to encounter a time with your child that he's not going to want to go to bed. He's not going to want to rest. But you know that's what's best for him. So what you're going to do is you're going to give him the opportunity to fight himself. You can choose either what's good for you, the rest, or your own way. But I'm going to provide you with what you need. I will never leave you without what you need. I'm going to provide you with what you need to choose rest, but I am not going to force you. I am not going to lay you down, hold you down, because I can't, right? I can't force you to sleep. But I can give you, I can provide what you need for rest. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you in a crib that has railings, boundaries. I'm going to shut off the lights, and I'm going to walk out. I'm giving you everything you need to stay in my rhythm, this rhythm that gives life. Now, I'm going to give you the choice to fight that. I'm leading you to my rest, but in the meantime, I'm also leading you to a battle, right? Because if you don't want to sleep, you may stand there and scream. And as the God figure here, I let him scream. I let him do the battle. What's going to be good for me, to get my way or to rest? What's going to be good? And there's this battle going on with this child between his will and the parent's will. What's good for him and what he wants. You see that? You see that fighting in there? Now, some children will scream and scream and scream and finally know in their bodies, I'm exhausted. I need to sleep. And they succumb to that rhythm. Some, I think just the other day, somebody told me about... Was it Carmel? Yeah. Michael learned to get out of his crib, right?
How to stand up.
How to stand up,
so he's gripping the railing.
Right.
And he fell asleep
like that. Yep.
And when he finally quieted down and I had fallen asleep and I went to peek in at him, he was sleeping, gripping the railings. And when his knees would bend a little bit, he would just lock them and go like that and then fall back. And
okay, that's a great picture. That's such a picture of us. Like, I want my way, I want my way, I want my way. And God's like, you need to rest. And so he brings us sometimes to battles where we are going to rest. And we still might have those clenched fists. Like, I don't want to rest, I don't want to rest, I don't want to rest. And he makes us rest. And I have been there. And I've said to God, okay, have I rested enough? Come on, God, it's long enough. No, Jill, get the fists off the railings. So this battle here, we allow the child to battle. And we, if you're a good parent, you allow them to battle maybe several times until they realize, oh, this rhythm is actually life for me. So their way, the will of my parent, was actually life and my will was not. Now, sometimes we have a child who climbs out, who turns on the light. So we have these openly rebellious, I am going to get my way. We also have children that aren't openly rebellious. They lie down and they just lay there and they don't sleep, but they look like they're sleeping. They look like they're being obedient. They look like they're succumbing, and yet they don't. I don't know how often that is, because we probably think, oh, they're quiet, we don't know. But there is that case. So the point is, God says, I want you in my rhythm because, not because I want my will done. God says, I want you in my rhythm because I want to give you life. This is good for you. I want you to sleep because it's good for you. So I'll give you everything you need to be able to be in my rhythm. You can choose. You can choose battle if you want. You can choose not to be in my rhythm, and then there's going to be a battle. And if you choose to take what I've given you, you will overcome your own will and sleep. If you choose not to, you hold on and you grasp and you scream and you yell and you continue to grumble. Is this a picture enough for what's going on with Israel? Okay. So that picture, I think, helps us to understand what God's doing here. Because I hope when you first read this chapter that you thought, this is so weird. We have the story of getting the water, and then we have a war. Like, are they even related? Yeah, they're really related, completely related. So let's look at the picture of the water and then the war. So what he's doing is training them. He's strengthening their spirit while disciplining, weakening their flesh. Because this is what the training is going to be about. I'm going to train you to know I am the only God, the only one that brings life. I'm going to train out of you all your other gods, your will, your desires for what you want, your picture. So I'm going to train that out of you. So when we talk about, we have a picture of how things are, and God says, yeah, let me see that picture. I'm going to train that out of you so you no longer have a picture. It's only my picture. So what's going on at the very beginning of this chapter 17? They have a need, water, right? How did they get to a place where they have a need? How did they get here?
God led them following.
Yeah, God led them, right? God led them to a need, to a place of need. He led them there, right? Why? Why would he lead them to a place of need?
So they can depend on.
Yes, so they can learn dependence. So they can learn that everything that they need for life comes from him. And the hope, if they're trained eventually, is that they'll come to a need and the first thing they do is go to him. God, we're thirsty. We know you can give us water. Will you give it to us? Your picture, your timing, whenever you want, whatever kind of water you want. That's what he's training them. But this is the beginning of training. I'm going to bring you to a place of need so that you have the opportunity to ask. But of course, they don't take that opportunity to ask. Instead, they grumble. And they complain against the Lord, of course, to Moses. Not to God, but to Moses. And so,
they use the word quarrel in verse 2. I'm just wondering, is there a different word? Like,
it is a different word.
In the Hebrew.
I think it does. Let me look up what it. It means they're very similar. The grumbling and the quarreling are very similar. I think it means to argue. Argue. To strive, contend, argue, make a charge against. Basically, you're not doing this. Well, they have, because that's what Moses is doing, right?
Okay, so just through Moses.
Through Moses' example, they know that they could do that.
For kind of that training, right?
I mean, the training that only God is going to provide.
Right, right, exactly.
The way out of these situations.
Exactly. So it's just like an infant. You can't say to a brand new newborn, now, know that when I come with you and I'm opening my blouse, this is food, right? You can't say that to the infant. You have to show them, right, over and over. And, you know, it doesn't take long before an infant, wow, you know, they recognize that this is food.
But in verse 2, Moses says, you know, why do you grow me? Why
right.
do you ask the Lord? So
mm-hmm.
he's kind of saying, I'm out in the handle here. You know, I think he's been
right.
saying that.
Right, right, right. So, yes, they are knowing that this is how they could do it. But it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. They're seeing pictures. But it will take a while, like it does us even. So the need is water. And they got to this need by him. And God wants them to ask for it so that they understand that he's the provider. That's why he wants them to ask. Have you ever done that with your children? You wait until they ask for something?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done that? That's actually a very good exercise. So that they understand that it comes from you rather than them. Last night, I don't know if any of you watched some of the returns.
Mm-hmm.
I almost stood up. Oh my gosh. I don't remember what candidate it was. He said, it was one that won. He said, we have to understand that it isn't government that gives us prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh good. Oh, good. And then he said, it is us that gives us prosperity. And I'm like, wait. No. Deuteronomy says, if you come to that place where you have all this prosperity and you say, we've done good. We've given ourselves prosperity.
I just thought.
Rand Paul. I thought, oh. See, that's where we're at.
Keep cold. Finding a new
that's
enemy.
Where we're at.
That's a battlefield of all
yeah.
politicians.
Yeah.
We're going to name this one the enemy.
Right. Right.
Can we work together?
Right.
Well,
and
we're
going to
name this one hope, and we're going to name that one hope.
Yes. Yeah.
The other thing
yeah.
too. You know what I mean?
Right.
I did
so,
find one thing encouraging, and it was really funny because I don't think the media meant to show this. It was right before Kirk was going to come and give his speech.
Mm-hmm.
What acceptance? Yeah. Someone on his campaign said, we are going to stop and we are going to pause and we are going to thank God. And so he launches
That's
into
nice.
This prayer, right?
Really?
And it was about like this, it was like a prayer. Like, and then all of a sudden, like he's praying and then they go back to NBC and they're like, pull me up in just a minute.
Sorry, we didn't mean to show that.
But I was amazed that they even showed it as long
really
as
cool.
they did.
Yeah, that's funny.
Like,
yeah.
They probably were, but even if it doesn't show, even if it was like their plans not to show
yeah.
that, like the guy
it got
is
shown.
Like, you're going to pray,
yeah.
and he launches into Dear Lord, and it was shown anyway.
You know, kind of like the minor point when one of the newscasters said, you know, yes, and they credited a higher power, and Diane sort of goes, God. Thank you,
God.
God,
yes. Okay, so the need is water. God's brought them to that a point of need. He's not going to withhold what they need, but he is going to bring them to a place of need so they understand where the need gets met.
Well, Jill, I'm thinking like, and this is what we do too, I'm thinking my children have gotten to the place where the way they even ask for something is like
yes.
declaring,
yes.
you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's our training problem
that's
is
right.
like, I'm thirsty.
Like,
which is exactly what they
I
say.
Want, you know,
give
you know,
us water.
Yeah, you're like, whoa. Like, all you have to do is ask me for water. You
yep.
know what I mean? And I'll give you water. And I'm just like, how we've gotten to the place where, like, our way of asking God for stuff.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Like, and we think
exactly.
Asking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So true. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if this may be the place where I want to read 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 14 again. But from the message, because of the wording that we've used, like craving for evil things, we look at that and we go, well, I don't crave for evil things. Well, now that we know what evil things are, retreating from the battle of our flesh, I crave for evil things all the time. I don't want to battle my flesh. But the message is the only translation that I want. Oh, yes, he gets it. This is so cool. I'm actually reading a book by him now, so I'm thinking, oh, and it's called Eat This Book. I mean, he knows and understands what this is about. This is Eugene Peterson. Remember our history, friends, and be warned. They went through the water in baptism. They ate from the rock, all of that. But I want to get to the one point. The same thing could happen to us. We must be on guard so that we never get caught up in wanting our own way as they did. That's the translation of we do not crave evil things.
Can you read that one more time, please?
We must be on guard so that we never get caught up in wanting our own way as they did. That's exactly what it is. Craving evil things, I want to retreat from the battle. I want to do it my way. I don't want to do it God's way. And we must not turn our religion into a circus as they did. We must never try to get Christ to serve us instead of us serving him. Mm-hmm. That's the trying, the testing. That's the transactional. Mm-hmm. He just does a wonderful job with all this. Mm-hmm. Keeps on going. Don't be so naive and self-confident. You're not exempt. You could fall flat on your face as easily as anyone else. Forget about self-confidence. It's useless. Cultivate God confidence. No test or temptation that comes your way is beyond the course of what others have had to face. All you need to remember is that God will never let you down. He'll never let you be pushed past your limit. He'll always be there to help you come through it. So, my very dear friends, when you see people reducing God to something they can use or control, get out. That's exact. I was so thrilled. I just looked that up right before you came. I thought, oh, I love it. It's exactly what he's saying, and it really gives us those get away from the religious terms anymore. This is what we're talking about here.
Was that in the message?
That's the message.
What
yeah.
Is it?
Oh, well, it's 1 through 14, 10, 1 through 14.
Sorry.
And the verses I read you were verse 6, 9, 10, and 12 through 14.
Get that off the internet?
Yeah.
BibleGateway.com.
Yeah.
Yes, great.
Yeah.
Jill, in my conviction over not memorizing the Exodus 6 yet, can I say 1 Corinthians 10:13? I memorized it in high school, and any of you with high schoolers, that's a terrific verse to encourage them to commit in their heart.
As long as they know the context.
Yeah, that's good.
Go ahead, say it.
Okay, I didn't know if that was all right. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man, for God will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. And when you are tempted, he'll provide you with a way out so that you can, and I did this, stand up under it.
Yep.
I still have that in my heart. And that's such a powerful testament to what we memorize as children.
Right.
It's still there because when we came across it today, I was like,
there it is. And the way of escape is get back in his rhythm. Get back in his rhythm. He's got it there for the way of escape for the baby who's like dying to get out. The way of escape is lay down. Submit to his rhythm. He wants you to rest. That's the way of escape. See that, and that's really, and that's why I say in context, it's so necessary for us to understand the way of escape isn't, oh good, I don't have to deal with that anymore. No, actually the way of escape is let God take care of it. Rest, be in his rhythm. Stop getting your way in there. So that's kind of where we're going with this. So they have this desire, they have this need, but they also have a desire. And their desire is that they have immediate gratification, that it come their way. Now, I want it now. That's basically what they're saying is, give us water now. And the point of God not giving them water now was so that they would ask, that they would be in his rhythm, that they would gather when he supplies it. Does that make sense? So the rhythm thing is a big deal for him. But what they do instead is grumble because they have this immediate gratification of, I want, this is what I want, and this is when I want it. So our gods aren't just what I want, but when I want it, right? And we'll continue to look at those.
We want prosperity now.
Right.
Think about divorce, networking.
Right, exactly.
Everything.
And my timing has got to be, which is really with all of our grumblings that we mentioned, there's timing too in there, right?
Oh, yeah.
The driving. I want those people have got to get out of my way now because I need to go there now,
Clean house
now, right? My children, perfect pictures of my picture now. Yes.
Not.
So all of these are a now thing.
I think a key element too is they don't recognize how able God is. Mm-hmm. And we had such a picture of this last night when my son, he's 15, he was writing his paper and it disappeared from the screen. Mm-hmm. And he was just over the moon about that. This always happens to me. This era. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, would you like Dad to look at it? Your father is the technology director of the math department. You think he knows? But this always happens to me. And he didn't want Dad to come in and save the day. And he just was beating it up. Finally, he just got out of the chair and asked David to help him. And he couldn't even stay in the room. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And David pulled the paper back up again.
Yes, that is a perfect picture, because really, this angst that he felt, that Carl felt last night, was this: my way isn't getting done. I don't want to have to rely on Dad, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be independent.
And our reaction is, there's someone there to do it.
But here's
misplaced trust. That's the thing.
Yes.
Like, I'm frustrated because this is supposed to go my way all the time, the computer. You know what I mean? It's funny when those things go out because it's misplaced trust.
Right. Really exactly. Mm-hmm. And here's the neat thing is that provision, that what happened to Carl, that his paper went blank, was a provision.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. It was a provision for him to learn what his father was capable of doing.
And the shortcomings of where he put his trust.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah.
So, here's the thing. God never withholds what we need permanently. But he will withhold it temporarily so that we come to that place. Now, most likely what would have happened last night in their home, Carl would have been frustrated and frustrated. If he never asked, David would have at some point gone, Carl, I'm going to help you here. Sometimes, right? Sometimes he would have stepped in. So what we have here, just like the picture of the kid in the crib, God says, I'm not going to withhold water for you. I'm going to give you water. Even though you're in the midst of grumbling, I'm going to give you water. But as I give you water, which is what you need, I'm going to also let you battle it out, which is why the battle comes.
Even if the Israelites are not asking, God's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
David wouldn't have just stood there and went, I'm going to wait for you to ask nicely. I mean, he would still be there. He would have been there for your son. I mean, he would have eventually heard it out for and maybe, say, hey, what's up?
So we have God doing this. So we have him saying to Moses, use your rod, use your staff. And why he has him use his staff all the time, let's reiterate this. The staff is the symbol of God's authority and power. Mm-hmm. So every time he says, Moses, get your staff, it's Moses, show the people that I'm the one who has the power to give life. I am God. I can give it. So Moses, get your staff and strike the rock. Now, I love the fact that we don't have to pretend that we know what it is. Corinthians tells us what it is. The rock is
Christ.
It is a picture, a type of Christ. And that he gets struck, it's the same word as the word pierce. He gets pierced, and when he gets pierced, out of him flows life, flows water. And if you go to John, we are told that the water is actually the Spirit, Christ's Spirit. Christ's Spirit does not come to us until he is pierced for us.
Mm-hmm. Does it get into the fact that water did flow out of?
And water did flow out of Christ
when he was
pierced.
Not what flows out of us.
Right. So here we have this beautiful picture of Christ. And remember, God is telling his story. And he's going, look, I'm going to take these people. So he's taking this picture and making Israel the pictures for all of us.
Right,
Acura,
across
So we have this beautiful picture in the desert of this rock being pierced. Now, when you picture this, don't picture like a rock like this, and don't picture the Plymouth Rock, which was bigger. Picture the word here is not rock. The word is cliff. This mammoth amount of, yes, mammoth thing. This mammoth thing. And that's important because later we're going to see Moses being hidden in the in the cleft of the rock. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Same rock. Mm-hmm. We're going to see it over and over and over again. So it's this huge thing.
Like a waterfall, maybe?
Yes. And it's more like a waterfall because what we do see later on is that it says the rock was Christ and the rock followed them, mm-hmm. continuing to give them. Many streams of water came out of this. So don't picture in your head. Get rid of this picture. Your picture's wrong. It's not a small rock where some water comes out. It's this cliff where waters come out. And they are provided for the whole time in the wilderness. Okay? Yes, exactly. Yes. So this is why this is...
In the retelling, Joe, I was after that part, I was still thinking, even though I pictured a smaller rock, I was picturing there's some reaction, and then we get right into the...
Yeah, yeah, we don't have much anywhere. It's almost like, it's like when Sherilyn says her kids, I'm thirsty, and she gives them thirst, and they go away, and like they think nothing of it, right? Because they're still not getting it yet. They're being trained, but they're still not getting it yet. So we have this grumbling, which... Just as an aside, grumbling always leads to doubt. Why? Because grumbling just said, I'm stepping back from your presence. And if I step back from his presence, then I doubt that he's actually here. And this is why they say, is the Lord with us or not? Because when they chose to grumble, they chose to step back from him. So we have this, all of this stuff is going on while they're grumbling. So the grumbling is a big deal. It does a lot when we think about it. The provision is the water, which is really the spirit. So he's giving them what they really need to live, just like he told them before. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of my mouth. So when he gives the manna, he's saying, I'm giving you physical bread, but know every time you eat physical bread, what you really need are my words, my presence. I'm giving you water, physical water, but every time you drink water, know what you really need is my presence, my spirit in you. And this is why he uses bread and water, these physical things that we have every day to know. Now, this is what I really need, and I really need it every day, his presence. So we have that. Here's the neat thing. So we have the water, it tells us, is the spirit. We have the rock, which is Christ. But at the very beginning, he says, God says to him, I will stand upon the rock. Mm-hmm. And what this is God says, this is who I am. This is my identity. I stand on the rock. The water's in the rock. There's your Trinity right there. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. What do you really need? My presence. My full presence is what you need for life. Mm-hmm. So this is that beautiful picture that God gives the Israelites as well as us.
What verse is that?
Six. What is it? Yes, six. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock. And actually, I think that word, that stand is abide, dwell. This is where I live. I live on the rock. This is one piece. So, we have that provision. The provision is for strengthening the spirit. I'm giving you the crib, the dark room, so that you can live in me, in my presence, in my rhythm. I am the God who will give you what you need. I am the only God that will give you what you need. But there's another provision I'm going to give you. I'm also going to give you war. That's a provision. Yesterday for Carl, that was a war. That was a little battle there. I'm providing for you war because you have in you all these other gods. So I'm providing opportunities for you to get rid of those gods. And this is so important for us that he gives us that. And how did they get to the war? I mean, it almost looks like it's a completely separate story, but it's not. How did they get there? Because it says, here's the, and this is why you know it's connected. the very beginning, verse 1, 17. All the congregation journeyed by stages according to the command of the Lord, and they camped at Rephidim. Mm-hmm. Now go to 8. Then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim, where God led them. Where God led them. So he leads them to war. Now, here's what we need to know. This is why you so need to know context, and why I've started in the summer doing Genesis, why we're doing Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, because it's so important that we know the characters. Because if we don't know the characters, we miss what's going on. So who's Amalek? Well, we haven't studied Amalek because we didn't do all of Genesis. But who's Amalek? Amalek is the grandson of Esau. Now, who's Esau?
Esau, Jacob.
Jacob's brother.
Yeah, Jacob's brother. What is Esau known for? What did he do?
He sold his birthright
for what?
Soup.
Right, for the lust of the flesh. Amalek is the picture of what it is like to live by the flesh. So, you see, you understand why you need to know the characters here. So this is why it comes. And it's so interesting to look at the characters here. So we have Amalek, the grandson of Esau, who sold his birthright. And this is what remember he loses a blessing, and yet Jacob his father still Isaac his father gives a blessing to Esau still. And here's the blessing. You will and I've just named a couple of them. First of all, you will live so interesting. You will live away from the dew of heaven. Does that remind you of anything?
The manna?
Yes. It says the manna came as the dew of heaven. Yes. So, all a long time ago, the blessing to Esau was, you will live away from the dew of heaven. You will live away from the manna of heaven. You will choose to take yourself apart. So living by the flesh is living away from God's manna. God provides, and you say, no thanks. I don't want to live there. I don't want to be in that place.
How is that a blessing then?
Well, you have to understand, blessing is a telling of this is what your life will be like.
Okay.
Okay.
Like prophecy.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But he was weak, though. I mean,
he was strong.
Yep. Yeah. He had the choice. I mean, he had the choice of waiting until he was offered the food and not to sell it. What he saw was that my immediate gratification is more important than what is
over there. Right. Well, the food was there.
He wants it. Now. Now.
Jacob was the bossy brother and he really took the bull by the horns.
Jacob was actually very weak. But see, once he put himself under God, you see that weakness. Then God trains out that weakness. Okay, so he lives away from the dew. He lives by the sword. He oppresses others to get what he wants, right? So Esau lives by the sword. He does not... Okay, so the rest of these, the last three, are what God says about Amalek. He says he does not fear God. He attacks from the rear, which is exactly what grumbling does, right? It doesn't go to God and say, God, I don't get it, why? It goes behind God's back, right? So this is the grumbling, the idolizing my flesh. And it attacks when faint and weary, which is exactly what you just said. When we're weak, this is when the flesh comes up. Oh, good. I can now take over. And God also says, when you are weak, I am strong. So you have a choice there. So all that to say, when we see the words that Amalek came to war against them, it is the picture of the flesh. God led them to a place where they needed to battle their flesh. God leads us to places that we need to battle our flesh, to say, I don't want to be a slave to my flesh, to my immediate gratification, to my desires, to my picture. So, They go to war, and it's an interesting war here. Moses again uses the staff. As remember, it's always a picture of under God's strength. I'm depending on you, God, to bring us through here. That whenever he's able to do that, whenever he uses the staff, what happens? They win, right? They're victorious. They're routing the enemies. But every time he lets down the staff, what happens? They start to get defeated, right? So what we have here, number one, is God saying, in my strength, the battle against your flesh, you're going to be victorious. But every time you try to do it in your own strength, you're going to lose. And man, I thought about this. Some of my grumbling has to do with, I exercise all the time and I'm still gaining weight. Of course, yeah, it's the food. So I'm exercising, but I'm also still eating. And God says, I want you to be in this rhythm of this time of your life, in this rhythm, slow down. You don't need to gather so much. You don't need to eat so much. But I want what I want, right? I want this picture here. And every time I try to do it in my own strength, okay, I'll exercise. This morning, the Dr. Oz thing. All you have to do is get rid of 100 calories every day, 100 calories every day. And so I'm thinking, okay, so God, 100 calories, what can I get rid of with 100 calories? And I'm literally, I'm doing this, and I'm switching back and forth. Okay, so 100 calories, okay, I can do this. And God's saying, it's going to fail. It's going to fail. I want you to get in my rhythm. I want you to have my picture, not your picture. We can go all over that, but all that to say, it requires dependence on him. This is this picture of Moses putting the staff. When we depend on him, fighting the flesh will be victorious. But this is what we do. We say, oh, my flesh is trying to control me. I am going to not let this. I'm going to battle the flesh. And we go and battle the flesh with our flesh. I mean, it's ridiculous. We can't do it. When we think about this, he has Joshua, for the first time we hear Joshua, go and pick able men to go in battle. These men have never fought in their lives. They've been slaves who've built. They have known nothing about war at all. They've been now wandering and they're weak. Could they win the battle? Absolutely not. They could not. Except when they let God fight it for them, help them do that. So we have that, but then we also have Moses being so tired that what happens? He needs help, right? He needs help. So we have God saying, you need to depend on me, but also what? You need others. Because what were you created for? Relationship. So you need others. You've got to have others to help you. And so we have Aaron and Hur holding up his arms, and every time they hold them up, they win.
It's so opposite of what we teach in our society.
Yes.
When we tell our kids, figure it out yourself, which is, you don't need anybody, you know.
Right, right.
And then, or you're to be independent, it's like a mixed message. No wonder they're like.
Well, sure, sure. And that's why, when we get to Matthew and Sermon on the Mount, why that was such a radical thing. But we take and we go, well, how can we fit it in our little transactional world and make it work? You can't. It's completely different than how the world works. So God has this picture of, I'm going to bring you to battles, and they're for your good. They're for you to get rid of your flesh. And trying to battle the flesh with the flesh isn't going to work. You have to battle it with God's help and with others' help, too. You cannot do it alone. And to reiterate that, we're going to have the next chapter. You are not supposed to do the kingdom of God living alone, ever. It always, because God made us for relationship. It is why he is a Trinity, to show us what it looks like. It's not between me and God. It's all of us. It's got to be that. So, without we can't win the war against flesh on our own. We need his power and their help. And so this is where Moses makes the altar to Yahweh Nissi. The Lord is my banner. And the banner is, since we very rarely understand war stuff, this is what goes first, what goes in front, what identifies who is the leader of this warring unit. It's the flag that goes in front. And it says, Jehovah Nissi, Yahweh Nissi, God is my banner. I will fight my flesh only under God's strength. That's what it is. Only under God's strength. I will not go into battle against my flesh with my flesh.
Mm-hmm. And then you don't need God.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You still are God because you're fighting yes. it with your own
yes.
flesh.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I once heard that when the Israelites marched into battle, the tribe that went first was the tribe of Judah. And Judah means praise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they
yes.
would go in
with praise. Praise. Yep, yeah. Right. Saying, God...
But the priests in the ark went ahead of them a lot.
Exactly. Notice, it's always, I identify with the fact that God is the one who's defending me. I identify with that fact. Because if I don't, I start in with my flesh. Oh, we're warriors. I mean, this is, every time they go in, the pictures of all the battles in the Old Testament are all strange. They're mm-hmm. all strange for a purpose. I mean, the Jericho battle, mm-hmm. the battle of the sun not going down, all of the battles, the battle that we looked at in 1 Chronicles, where stand and see, just watch them fight over themselves, and they're just going to kill themselves. All of them are strange because it is God who does the fighting, who goes forward to us. So us battling our flesh, it's going to look weird and strange. It's not going to say, oh, here's the new diet. This is exact. Just follow this. Write down all your food today. Choose what you can get out of this. Do all of this. Now, obviously, they look like they work sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. The Biggest Loser. I mean, that's one of these biggest... I have never watched it, but I hear that they have this trainer and they get it done. But what happens afterwards?
Right. It comes back.
It comes back, right? Which is always the cycle of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what God keeps saying. I want you in this rhythm here. And in the rhythm I've given you, it's actually a very healthy rhythm. And in that rhythm, it won't be about what you look like, first of all, but I will give you what you need for health. So, we could go again in all those places.
Should we go back to, I just thought of this. I've been trying to evaluate the last couple of weeks. And so last time Pastor left me a message. She was like, I'm praying for you. Just want to check in. How are things going? And I didn't call him back yet because I was like, I can't even articulate, you know, because things just are a mess, right? But as I'm sitting here learning today, I'm like, well, thank God they're a mess.
Yes.
Because you know why?
Yes. Yes.
A lot of it is my
yes.
pride.
Exactly. Exactly.
A mess. Mm-hmm. So instead of like waiting on him and going to him first, I react instead
yep.
of respond.
Yep.
So really, it being a mess.
Yes.
Is a blessing
yes.
because otherwise I wouldn't be forced to be like, oh, that is totally the flesh and that is an idol. And you know what I mean?
Yes.
If things just work
yes.
out nice and smooth,
right.
I wouldn't even like pause to acknowledge what was going on.
So he provides not only strengthening for the spirit, but he provides weakening for the flesh. That's exactly what it is. So all the wars that we're brought to, all the battles, all the really hard times, mm-hmm. these are provisions for us. And the provision is a good provision to get rid of the stuff in our life that are idols. These are good provisions. So the war here is a provision to weaken the flesh. He is getting rid of the idols that they brought with them out of Egypt, and that is definitely the flesh.
Isn't it interesting how though we can rejoice when it's someone else?
Yes.
I'm in counseling because I'm a counselor, and so like I'm pouring my sobbing my heart out to her, and she's like, "But Jen, look what God is doing. Look, you're aware of this sin, and you're broken." She's like, "Oh, God, I'm not sure." And then I find myself doing that same thing to other people. I'm like, "But stop and look at this through spiritual eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Look what God is doing."
Yes.
Okay, but isn't that interesting? Like, other people,
but,
we, you know.
But it is why we do need other people.
Yes,
and
yes.
We do need other people in the midst of our wars. We do need them to encourage us, to continue to be under God and not try to do it in our own flesh, right? We need people to come alongside of us, and we need to be alongside of others. Now, if I never tell you I'm in a war, you're never going to come alongside of me. And then I'm going to be doing it on my own.
Which is prideful too.
Which is part of the flesh. Mm. So do you understand that? I mean, it's really, really important that we understand
humility.
This.
That
it is total humility. Total humility. And
it's pride to keep it like.
Yes. Oh, I'm gonna work on this. I'm not gonna let anyone know. I'm just gonna work on this. I'm trying to think of what I just encountered something like that this week. Somebody said, oh, I don't remember.
We have to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ask, so what's the to-do for us, Jill? I mean, besides ask God to help us pay attention, ask God to help us keep listening, ask God to help us stay conscious.
Well, I think, and we'll kind of go that at the end, but this is why I have the question I did this morning. Mm-hmm. And I struggled because it wasn't a picture of like what it was going to look like here. The question is, where's your grumbling? Where's God leading you with that grumbling? This is where God is dealing with you. This is the idol. Be aware. Stop thinking that grumbling is a natural part of the life in the kingdom. It's not. It's a natural part of the life in Egypt. He's trying to get that out of you. Be aware. And so why do I say be aware? Really, what's been the key word up until now? Listen, listen, listen. God is continuing to tell you, I am your God. I am your God. I am your God. You have a God here, and he does, really, I think this is an absolutely amazing way that he does this, that he shows us through our own words. Through our words, we identify our idols.
Well, something I've been thinking about this whole lesson, too, is like the difference between grumbling and wrestling.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And like the grumbling, right? Like you were saying, separates you.
Right.
So it's like
right.
You're not really talking to that person.
Right, right.
Like this. And I guess with the picture of the banner, God's basically saying, like, I don't mind you wrestling with your enemy.
Exactly.
Just wrestle with your enemy under
right.
me. Like,
right.
Wrestle with me. I, you know what I mean?
Yes,
then you're
exactly.
Engaging
exactly.
Me.
Right. Be in my presence and say, man, God, I really do want all my food. I still want the same amount of food that I've always wanted. God, I really still do want that. I know that is this gratification. And I know I don't need it, but man, I still want it, God. I still, mm-hmm. God says, good, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear mm-hmm. that what you're struggling with. Mm-hmm. Go into it. Go into it. And it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a war. It's not going to be like, oh, okay, now that you've identified it. No, it's going to be a war. Go into it with me. Be honest about it. But here's what he doesn't want us to do. He doesn't want us to go behind his back. He doesn't want us to turn around mm-hmm. and grumble. Mm-hmm. This is not fair. I am riding all this time, and I'm walking all this time, and I'm exercising all this time. That is exactly what he doesn't want us to do.
Well, I've also heard that anything that is like in your mind's eye, if when you're talking to the Lord, the thing that you want is bigger than his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. It's an idol.
Right.
But if
right.
you take your eyes off of what you want
right.
and put them
right.
on to his mm-hmm. face.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It becomes
right.
bigger, so
yes.
it's actually standing in the way of it. And he's like, well, you,
yeah.
you just look at me.
Yes.
Rather than,
right.
all right, I want to lose weight.
Right.
That,
right.
That's the big thing.
Right. Right. Exactly. And really, and thinking about that, what do I really want? I want my picture mm-hmm. to look good. Mm-hmm. And God says, I look good. Look at me. Mm-hmm. I'm the picture. I look good. I have this rhythm for you that is life-giving. Mm-hmm. Look at me. Look at me. Keep that focus. So that kind of answers your question a little, but we're going to do a little bit more of that. So let's go on to the next part, because then we have...
Can I ask one question,
yeah.
When, in verse 14, okay, then the Lord says to Moses, write this in a book as a memorial, big thing about the whole book of memorial, okay,
mm-hmm.
That I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under the heaven. But then... You know, I'm thinking, okay, that kind of was kind of a foreshadow when we studied Kings.
Right.
And Saul messed up by not getting rid of every single one. But then
okay, wait. Stop right there. Oh. Who did he not get rid of?
There were a couple of friends of his, right? That, or other allies. Or a couple more than
it was the king of Amalek.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that's who he didn't get rid of. And that's who he. That's why Amalek wasn't blotted out right away. Because he kept the king of Amalek. So wow. you bring up exactly that point. So we have God saying, I'm going to blot him out. I'm going to give you these opportunities to blot him out over and over again. And Saul says, yeah, I'm going to keep Amalek around. I'm going to keep the flesh around a little bit. Yeah, keep him in the pocket.
I was thinking, like, yeah, you don't need to kill everybody.
Yes, yes. Because, remember, Israel was there to show us this picture of. And we say, I don't have to kill all of my flesh, just most of it, right? It's still good for me to... And I hear this all the time. There are times when I need to stand up for my rights. Right? Right? That's a flesh, yeah. I hear these all the time, guys. Yeah, from all of you, from me. We say these things.
What's interesting is we're asking God to kill our flesh when he's saying, no, you have to kill it.
Yes, yes. Well, you I'm going to give you, just like the baby in the crib, I am not going to force you to sleep, but I'm going to give you the opportunity to battle what's good. Now, he does say that that he's going to blot out Amalek's name. Interesting thing about Amalek. Is the, I think, one of few, but I think one of the only people groups in the Bible that they can find no evidence for. None. God blotted out the name of Amalek. Completely. So completely that no archaeologist can find anything from the Amalekites.
Yeah, there's going to be a war from generation to generation that Moses says right after.
Right. Because of Saul keeping Amalek.
But if this was Exodus, they didn't know that Saul was going
to
do that.
No, because he's going to give them the opportunity to blot him out, blot him out, blot him out. They will finally. All right. So, Exodus 18. Now we have a really interesting situation. Actually, this is one of my favorite pieces of Exodus. I love this because of who Jethro is. But it's...
There was only one day of homework for it. I was wondering, when are they ever going to get to the next chapter?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. Wow, that's it for them. But here's the thing. This is still part of the training. In the training, he's going to provide to strengthen the spirit, and he's going to provide to weaken the flesh. And the interesting thing is he sandwiched it. He sandwiched it. He gave them provision for their spirit. Then he helped weaken the flesh. And now he sandwiches it with, I'm going to strengthen the spirit. And so we have this beautiful provision. So... What's the need here? This is interesting because I don't think we think about this as a need. The need is to share his story. Moses has a need to share his story. Why is that a need and not a desire? Because we were made for relationship. So it is a need. We don't think of that as a need, and therefore we don't do it. We don't share our stories. And it's not my story, it's how my story came into God's story. Because remember, the whole thing is God's story, and Moses has this need to share, wow, like my story came into God's story. Wow, this is so cool. So Moses has just seen them be released miraculously out of Egypt, be given all these riches. He's seen them go through the Red Sea. He's seen the Egyptians drown. He's seen bitter water made sweet. He's seen manna come from heaven every day. He's seen water come out of a rock. Do you not think he's a little bit full?
Yeah.
Like, I gotta tell somebody this. Man, this is like amazing what I have seen God do. So he's got a need to share this. This is the coolest story. Because he doesn't, like he's still leading, he's still needing to do all this thing. And what does God do? He says, but God, obviously Moses desires this as well. So we have a need and a desire being the same. We have this coming together. So this is living by the Spirit. When my desire is the same as my need, and I know where to get that need fulfilled. And I wait for that need to be fulfilled by God. So Moses did not go, hey, I got to go somewhere and go tell somebody this. What does he do? He waits for God to bring him. And God brings Jethro. Now Jethro is a Midianite who lives on the other side, who has to travel through the wilderness, to come. God brings him. And how What does Jethro already know?
He knows
about, some of this. And so he's going, wow, this is amazing. I want to hear about this, right? Jethro comes with a heart that already wants to hear. He wants to listen to what Moses has to tell him. So the provision is a visitor who wants to hear about God's story in Moses' life. Moses and God's story together. So God brings him to this place. And of course, it's Jethro, his father-in-law. And Jethro, just so made clear, is a pagan. He is not a believer yet. He is a priest of Midian, remember? Okay. So we have this pagan come, and that's why I like this, because what was the promise to Abraham? Let's go all the way back there. What was the promise to Abraham?
He would bless the world.
He would bless the world, right? He would be able, and he doesn't say the promise is only for the Jews. He says, no, the promise is going to come through the Jews, and I'm going to give it to all. And here we have a Gentile already coming to the promise. So we have this visitor. It's Jethro, and of course the wife and kids are there now. Interesting, because we never hear again about the wife and kids.
But they were with him during this.
No, they were not.
No. Him meaning the father-in-law.
Yes, they were with him during. So during that whole time, at some point, and I do believe that they actually never got into Egypt. Remember when, at the very beginning, when Moses is coming back to Egypt, and he has to she circumcises? I think that's probably at the point where they went back to Midian, or the wife and kids. So they have not been through all this. So they get to hear their father, their husband, tell what God has done in his life. Interesting, because what we see from Jethro's description and from how the way Moses describes over and over and over again, Moses never says, you should have seen what I did. You should have seen me going to Pharaoh. You should have seen me making that path through the Red Sea. What does he say? You should have seen how God delivered us. You should have seen how God delivered us over and over and over again. So this is where we have, and the New Testament says Moses was one of the most humble men. Once he went through all this, he was this humble man being able to share God's delivery. So we have Moses sharing God's story that he got to experience. And we have Jethro listening carefully, and it says that he listened to Moses and he receives what Moses has to say. He actually receives it. And how do we know he receives it? Because of his response.
Right. Yeah.
And how does he respond? He does three things. First, he says,
I believe.
Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. He is the Lord. He is the I am. Then he gives a burnt offering. He worships. He gives something valuable to say God is worth serving. And then what's the third thing he does?
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, before that, I heard it over here. He shares a meal with them. What do we know about sharing a meal?
Covenant.
It's covenant. It's covenant. So what he's done is he has declared his belief in this God as the God, and then he goes and shares covenant. Interesting enough, think about this, and I don't think we think about this often. What do you think they ate?
The
manna. They ate manna. They ate the bread of heaven as the covenant meal.
So
they
ate.
Have
eaten any of the burnt offering or anything?
They probably wouldn't, because they weren't priests. Of course, we don't have this rule yet, but they may have eaten some of that, but the manna would have been the bread that they would have eaten. So the bread they eat is the bread of heaven. And we have this covenant meal that they eat together. So what we have is this, the Gentile, and you'll see this over and over again in Scripture. Every once in a while you have a Gentile come in, and they come into covenant. The Gentile women come in covenant all along that we see this. So we have God providing Moses with a need, to burst open with the story, and then he says, and here's how I'm going to provide you with what you need here. I'm going to give you someone who wants to hear it, and he's able to tell him that. Of course, the way that Moses deals with Jethro certainly makes Jethro a perfect place to be able to deposit this story. Because what does he say? Jethro is a Midian priest, and he's his father-in-law. He could have said, hey, I just let all these people out. Who are you? But he shows him what? Respect and honor, it says, to him. So we have this beautiful picture of being able to share God's story, what God is doing in his life. And it's received well by him. And it's under God's timing. But here's the other thing. It's Moses telling the story of how he's experienced God. What he's not doing is saying, okay, Jethro, sit down. You know, the way you have been living is not right. And this is who God is. And this is what God can do for you. This is not. In fact, we never have that. What we have is Moses sharing how he's experienced God. Because Jethro can't argue with Moses' experience, right? Jethro can't say, yeah, I don't believe that. This is what happened, and Moses is sharing it. This is why our story is our witness. Our witness isn't, I hope I don't offend anyone, our witness isn't, oh, here's a tract. And I thought about this when I was, when we were first, I think in Woodridge, I remember for Halloween, what did I do? I hand out tracts. Oh, I'm sure the kids were thrilled. You know, I gave them I gave them candy and a tract. And of course, a tract, you know, a little story about salvation, you know, a little, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, I found them all over the neighborhood.
Wow. What about that instead of a tip? That's real effective.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go.
It looks like money, but it's actually a tip.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's the deal. There's no relationship there. I'm not sharing what God's done with me. I'm not sharing a God who's living, who's really doing things. I'm sharing rules, regulations. Here's what this is. This is not what God ever intended us to do. God says, I am a living being, and I am going to have you know me, experience me, and I'm going to let you be a vessel to have others experience. Just share your story. Share what God is doing in your life.
Well, he was sharing what he was doing right then, too.
Yes.
He wasn't like, when I was a baby.
Yes, yes.
They were killing all the babies.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yep.
You know, like,
yep.
It was like, this is what God's doing right now.
Right now. You know? Right now, this is what God's doing. I mean, it's this beautiful, beautiful picture of a witness and somebody receiving it. I mean, wow. It's gorgeous.
It's so cool because I have a client right now who's just very tough and just, I'm the it and don't talk to me kind of thing. And long story short, it's been a 2-3 year relationship now. And she's not open to hearing anything from the Bible, right? But through sharing, I had a Christian intern this summer, and now a Christian intern now. So we're both in there, and we'll just be, I was able to say, you know, it really seems like all these things you're doing are trying to fill that void. But I got to tell you just what fills mine. And then I share that, and then I had both interns share that. And there really wasn't this now. You need to da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, I said, all I can go back to again is this is how God fills me. She's reading the word now. She's taking it. She agreed to, I said, you know, but I can't, you know, if you're interested, I have a Bible, but if not. And she's like, okay. And I knew she wouldn't know where to start, so I said, well, how about taking the 30-day challenge? She goes, what's that? I'm like, commit to reading a chapter a day. Tell God your doubts. And see if he reveals himself. Ask him to. Craig goes, John, I think you meant the 21-day challenge. There's only 21 verses in John. John said, fine. It was only because it was nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It was God's story that he was working out with
yep.
a couple of us who were believers. Whereas if we would have been like, okay, now... You know what, girl? John 3:16 says.
Yes,
she
right,
like,
right. Yeah,
so
right, exactly, exactly.
So you know what else is cool? Is that Jethro has something to offer too, like to Moses.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times
yes.
we think, we're the only ones who have anything
yes.
to offer.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean? And we can't hear anything from someone else.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, and notice, and here's the interesting thing, because we have Jethro listening to Moses, and then we have Moses listening
right.
to Jethro. So we have this mutual, I do respect you. Mm-hmm. I want to hear what you have to say. And what Jethro says is not only amazing in his advice, but in his advice he qualifies and he says, if God tells you so. If this is agreeing with what God says,
well,
then,
that's what
then this is.
People, right? Is if you're not willing to hear them,
right?
But you're expecting
right.
them to
exactly,
be
exactly.
Everything
exactly.
I hear about how we're supposed to interact and evangelize with Muslims mm-hmm. is exactly what you're saying. It's around relationship.
But it's everybody,
right?
Yeah. Everybody. It's
honor and respect.
Honor and respect. Yeah. It is sharing what God has done in my life, and you know, Bill and I had been somewhere and. And the conversations were all this is what I've done, this is what I've done. And we were driving in the car and I said, I'm so tired of hearing how wonderful people have succeeded. I'm so tired of it. If they want to say to me, wow, this is what God did this week. I can't believe it. I did this and God did this. I can't believe it. I said, I want to hear that. That's what I want to hear. I'm just done with hearing all these wonderful things you've done. Because I want to hear what wonderful things God has done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in what the wonderful things God's done, I'm actually going to hear your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, vulnerability. That's going to be tough. But that's what I just crave that sometimes. I want to hear that. We don't often have those conversations. Of course, if we eliminate grumbling out of our conversations, we may only have God to talk about. So let's look at this really quick. So the provision is to strengthen his spirit. They get to share this joy of dependence because it's all about, oh, God delivered us here. God delivered us here. God delivered us here. And he and Jethro are both like, wow, that is so cool. And they have this strengthening of spirit here. But the provision is also for wise counsel. And he brought it to him. He brought him wise counsel. And it was for Moses and all of Israel. So cool. Moses shares God's story, and it's for Jethro. Jethro shares the wisdom that God's already provided for him, and it's for all of Israel that they have. And it's received by listening. Both of them received what they needed by listening. So we go back again. It's listening, 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 and receiving that listening. So we have these pictures of how it looks to receive, how it looks to consume God's word and to make it part of you. How does Moses make this counsel part of him? He actually goes and does it. Mm-hmm. So he has this, Jethro tells him he needs to teach, and the word is actually to enlighten, to bring forth the shine that you've already received. So he enlightens, he teaches them. And I love this. As a teacher, I love this because sometimes people look to teachers to come and answer all their, okay, wait a second, this is my situation. What do I do here? And what Jethro's telling Moses is, teach them what God's word says so they know what to do. And there are times that they're just going to be confused and they're going to need you. But teach them what God says. God says that grumbling is an indication. Okay, so don't tell me, well, what do you think it means when I have this war here? No. I am not your answer man. Moses is not the answer man, the Bible answer man. Teach, just share what God's showing you, what God's doing in your life. And I will tell you this. I will tell you most of the time when you have teaching that's just filled, it's because it's what they're showing, it's what God's showing the teacher. Literally, when my teaching's bomb, it's because I just did the words. Yeah. When I have to take it in, I mean, God uses it. There's fruit from there. So he says, Moses, teach them what God is showing you. Teach them. Don't just decide for them. Teach them, just like we do little children, right? We teach them little by little how to make decisions
even
for themselves.
Moses had just been through so much, he did not really see the forest and trees.
Right, exactly. Exactly. He needed someone to go, Moses, you are going to burn out. And not only are you going to burn out, so is everybody else. And they're going to not take your counsel. So you need help here. Take help. Get help. So he does that.
To let go of that. I'm sure Moses was like, oh no, this is my job. This
calling
is my responsibility.
Yep.
And I
yep.
don't know if I can trust anybody
exactly.
else with this
that's staff. That's so true. And don't you think he probably didn't feel like He could trust them.
Which is what we do with our kids, too.
Right.
I don't think they can really do it without
right. Exactly. Exactly.
He was humble enough to receive.
Yep.
Yeah. And he listened.
Yep.
And I wonder how many times I've missed God because I thought it couldn't come from someone like that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And
instead of really
so true.
To,
so true.
You know, whatever.
And it is so fun to be surprised by God through some unlikely person. That has happened to me so many times. Now I sit back and go, oh, and that's why when this Jewish lady is like, she wants to be friends. It's just like, and by the most unlikely way, oh, let me come and help cook with you. Oh! You know? Yeah. But literally, when she said that, I thought, wow, God, never in my wildest dreams would I have ever imagined this person coming to teach me to cook. Like,
okay, Jill, in that situation, even when you mentioned earlier, I'm thinking, okay. Okay, you see that as God's bringing this person to you, okay, and I call you for a relationship. And this is going to sound very worldly. But, you know, as you're getting older, you know, there's times in my life that I think, you know what? I really don't feel like kibitzing with the whole crowd. I want to bring closer friends close, and you know, like it's, part of me feels like preserve yourself and your energy. If you really don't want all the negativity or the grumbling, and this person becomes, it sounds selfish, but like if you really don't want this woman in your home to teach you, maybe you're okay by saying,
But here's the interesting part. Liz is gone,
mm-hmm.
who was a person in your life that helped you
I know.
Have joy in cooking.
I know.
And here's someone God's bringing
I know.
To help you enjoy cooking.
And who knows
cooking
what God wants to do through you.
Oh, I know.
And
I know.
If you listen to what gives her life,
yep.
She will listen to what
exactly.
Gives
you exactly.
Life.
So you know she's from him.
Oh, I absolutely know it. I absolutely know it. I mean, and this is the woman out of all these people in this class. She has come to both Liz and I went Liz to this class. She was the one. They all go out to coffee afterwards. And they've always done this. They've been very nice to us, but it was only her. And it's continuing to only be her. Like, literally, I walk out of the building with one of the ladies, and the lady says, well, I'm going home to wash windows. And I think, oh, I guess they're not going for coffee. And I think, you know what? I'm just going to check. And I go, and there's that woman.
Oh.
Like, and I'm thinking,
you went to the coffee place?
Yeah.
And she's there.
Yeah, and she's there. She didn't go home to do windows. She went to coffee first. Okay. The Jewish woman is the only woman who constantly says, come and have coffee with us. Come and have coffee with us.
There's more to it.
Oh, there is. It's just what I'm saying is, God brings really unlikely people to, and I've been very open. She knows what I do. She knows that I'm teaching Exodus. I mean, and I'm thinking,
she's not afraid of you or it or
not.
It's interesting, though. The whole thing is that you have allowed your day not to be planned by what you want.
Which is, as you all know, this is not me. You know that I have things planned, but it's exactly how God is saying, this is the rhythm I want. I want you. I want you to be involved.
And in
this walk
ways,
this way.
He interrupts us
because
he really
all the
knows
time.
That's what he's really needing.
Yep.
But we're like, no, I got this dude, this
right.
dude, this
right.
dude. You know what? I just don't have time for people
right
now.
Right. But, and he has actually made it very clear. You have time for people, and you are going to make this time. So, I just want to say, it's just keep your eyes open because God does bring unlikely people, and what he wants you to do is share your story. Have a relationship with them. And you have no idea what God is going to do with this. I have no idea.
And sometimes it seems like he just like drops them.
Yeah.
I mean,
it absolutely does.
I did not see this person. This is my attorney, and I'm thinking, I can't believe this woman. She's da-da-da. I've got to forgive her. I don't want to forgive her. I can't believe this. I turn around. This lady's standing right there.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I really don't mean to bother you. But, Jenna, I don't know if you've heard. This is a client I had years ago. My husband and I, our marriage, we got divorced, we're getting remarried, and I just have to tell you,
aww.
I finally let go, and it's all about forgiveness. It's all forgiveness. Yeah, it's all forgiveness.
Uh-huh.
And I listen politely, and I'm like, I
told her, I'm so happy. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so happy for you. But I have to tell you, God is speaking through you. And it's really hard. And
you're like, it's
awful.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's like God dropped her down. She's not there in the restaurant. She's right there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So just be open. So that's one of those other things. So let's look at it from our point of view, just really quickly. What does it look like for us? How does God flush out our independence? Well, first of all, he's going to make us aware of our independence. My independence looks like this. My desires control me. I idolize my plan, which is really my picture. I idolize that. How many of you do not idolize your picture? Yeah.
How many of you are angsting right now like I am over the Christmas photo?
Okay.
We did church vote this summer and it was not great. My whole family went along with it. Yeah. Chuck even wrote the check. If this gets you off of everyone's back mind, we're done.
Jill, I'm praying about scrapping the whole idea this year. I'm sort of full.
Okay.
At capacity.
And that's actually a real picture. Your picture. I mean, it's kind of good. Your picture. You're idolizing your plan. And this is one of the things God is trying to train out of you. He's trying to train out of you your picture. He's trying to train out of you of having a picture other than him.
Yeah. I feel like God is doing that in me with the picture. I just feel like it's so much more of an adventure. I mean, if you're holding on tightly to your picture, I feel like it's very peaceful and just adventurous, kind of exciting.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
It's a duty of time, too.
It's an adventure. It does. And that I love that you use that word, because that's how I find, boy, when you start to go, okay, all right, I'll let you bring me to a battle here, and it is an adventure. It's like, wow, this is interesting. Now, does it mean it's always fun? No, but it is an adventure.
December 14th, it might not be an adventure. December 14th, you might say, oh, this adventure is,
pull out an old one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone will look younger.
Okay, so, yes.
Really quick to the picture, is that the picture that Moses gives us when he first started out is, no way, I'm not your man, to totally doing it, to then heeding Jethro's advice, giving Jethro advice, was really encouraging to me.
Yes.
We start out weak and doubtful, and then God strengthens us and encourages us.
Look at that. Look at really Moses is an amazingly different man from the very beginning on, but he's allowed God to train him over and over again. So that's a good point. So my desires control me. I idolize my plan. I idolize my timing. This is when I want it done. This is when I want to see it. This is when I want to see my perfect children and my perfect husband, and it usually was yesterday, right? So I do idolize my timing. It's kind of interesting because I'm thinking my timing with my gratification. I want what I want. He's training this out of us, that I have desires other than his desires, what I want, and my abilities. I idolize my abilities. Who can do this? I can do this. I can do this by myself. I don't need anybody to help me on this. I don't need help. And I struggle with this all the time. I can do this by myself. Yes, it works much better when I just do it. But maybe the task gets done, but the task wasn't the goal. It was relationship that was the goal. So my desires control me. But this is how Egypt works. Because Egypt has lots of gods. Because if we all have all these gods, that's Egypt, right? My God is my picture, my timing, my plan, my abilities, and your gods are your picture and your plans, and that's Egypt. We have lots of gods. And God says, yeah, I want to bring you to a place where there's only one God. Yes.
I just want to say on the flip side of what you're saying, when we intervene and be God to someone else, specifically children, I mean,
were like, well, we'll help, I'll help you without them even asking. So when you said, we really have to wait until they come to a place where they say, I really need your help, because it takes humility, it takes transparency, and that's what you want. You don't want to fly in there and say, okay, let me do that for you. Let me help you with that.
Right.
So I was just on the flip side.
Yep.
We can look at ourselves, but then sometimes we become God to those that are around us.
Right. So, God will be faithful to lead us to the battles of our flesh, to the place of where we have idols. The grumbling. The grumbling is that red flag key of where our idols are. So, that's flushing out my independence. That's what he's looking to flush out, those things. What's he looking to build, to strengthen? He's looking to strengthen my dependence and his presence, so that not my desires are controlling me, but his presence is controlling me. We talked about the whole matter of just being with God, us being with him, us entering into his story. And we do that by allowing him to keep that rhythm going with us, allowing that rhythm rather than the grumbling, stopping that rhythm. Every time I grumble, I take myself out of his rhythm. Mm-hmm. I stop it and I go, yeah, hang on, God. I want to be back away from you for a while. Every time I grumble, every single time. So his presence controls me, his plans. He brings me to places that require dependence. He will bring me to places of no water. He will bring me to places of war, so that I ask and I depend on him. His timing, when he knows I'm ready. Interesting that he did not... Remember at the very beginning, he said, I'm not going to lead them this way, the fastest way to Israel, because I don't want them to encounter war right away. But now he's leading them to war. Why? Not because they've built up a military. Not because that he's said, okay, here are swords. Everybody, let's practice. What he's done is he's shown them enough of who he is and how he provides. Now that they have enough of seeing that he provides, now he can lead them to war. You see that? Just like a parent doesn't say, just go to sleep. Just go to sleep right now. A parent says, I'm going to give you a crib, and I'm going to give you bars, and I'm going to give you a dark room, and I'm going to leave you alone in a nice warm blanket. I'm going to give you all the provisions you need, and then you can go to war with yourself. So this is why God knows the timing is right. He gives us enough experiences with him. And then... now I have the ability to choose. I can choose his strength because I've seen it. I've experienced it. Or I can choose my own. And it's always going to be left up to our choice. His presence controls me with his identification. He said that when he looks at us, he sees his son. He sees Christ. He gives us his spirit within us. And what it says is he jealously desires the spirit within us. And what that means is he wants that oneness. You have my spirit. I want it. I want to be there. This is that, yes, that communion. This is his desire that we be with him. And so our building of dependence is that he builds a desire to be with him in us. I just want to be with him. That's the life that he's showing us. And his provision is that he does give me nourishment and ability. He gives me the gifts of the Spirit, but to be used as avenues to share the Spirit, not to be used as avenues to build ourselves up. He's doing that through others. So these are avenues to share the Spirit with others. This is how the kingdom works. So Egypt works by everybody having their own gods. That's how the world works. And having your own gods, as we know, is a transactional way of living. This is transformational. God provides me with his presence in the midst of the journey. And he also provides me with other people to journey with me. He doesn't ask me to journey alone, ever. I'm going to give you exactly what you need here. So, now that we've looked at grumbling from an even deeper place, tell me your applications for grumbling, for your areas of idolatry, your refusals to go to battle against that.
I've talked about the clean house.
Mm-hmm.
I feel my house is never clean, even though I feel like I'm cleaning all the time. And I think God brought me to the place. I mean, Friday was God all day, relationship with people. Saturday, we celebrated my mom's birthday, relationship. But I wanted to get the first floor cleaned and Halloween decorations out. And so Saturday night, and I thought to God, I said, I know we're supposed to keep the Sabbath holy, but I'm going to be cleaning bathrooms and getting that house clean Sunday morning so I can put the Halloween decorations out. I actually said that to God. I said, because this is for the family, God. Not for me, because I want to clean. And God said, no, you're not, and I'm the only one who got food poisoning.
Voluminous, I think we said, or something like that.
But yeah. It was just horrible. But God was with me, and I was not like, why are you doing this? I knew exactly why. And he also showed me, I mean, even then, because I haven't thrown up or had that for a really long time, and I just thought about, you know, I hear stories about people who have cancer, who throw up. I'm like, if this is what it's like, this is just a little taste. Like, God, please be with everyone right now, suffering from that, because this is little. So anyway, it was just that. And Sunday I rested. I mean, I was weak. My husband brought me, you know, Pocari Sweat, which is like a healthy version of Gatorade. That's all I had. I didn't eat. I had some toast at about 6 p.m. But, and Stephanie put the decorations up. The house didn't get there.
It didn't fall down.
Okay, well, no, I cleaned the next day. I cleaned on Monday.
I felt a little like Jethro, because I tried to bring Stephanie her pumpkin seeds. And I walked in your kitchen, and I was like, yeah, I got it all under control. I've got her a special, to Gatorade, whatever. He said that. And I said, you know what would be awesome? It would probably be great for Carmel. But you clean up the whole kitchen. That would be such peace for Carmel. Oh, oh yeah, yeah. So I was like, wouldn't it be great if you walked out, Paul really took care of her.
Yeah, so, and for...
But, like, really cleaning the counters and making them...
And okay, so Carmel, for you sharing that, this is what I'm talking about. She's hearing what God is saying in those. She's not saying no. She's saying, okay, I'm gonna battle this with you. Yep, it's my flesh that I don't want to rest, but your rhythm is to rest, and it's really good for me. I mean, she could have tried to, and I'm sure some of you have tried to work through sickness, right? I'm gonna do what I said I was gonna do. But she was able to rest. So good listening for that. What other applications do you have for this grumbling?
Well, I was thinking so much about the grumbling. And I was cleaning like the tub, and my soap slips out, and it was another thing. Oh, no, I maybe was just getting the tub. It was like two or three things. First thing in the morning, I'm like, okay, I'm already grumbling. Is that what's grumbling? I mean, it forced me to think, oh, my gosh, most of what you grumble about is fleeting. It's over.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
done.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you really, like, you know, like think about all the extra grumbling and then go, I mean, the grumbling of go to God first, you know.
I have lots of examples.
Do you have another one?
Well, yeah. I mean, Joe, you remember on homecoming, I was grumbling about my husband who does a lot, and I asked him to get the camera ready, and it wasn't ready, and then it was full of tips. There was a problem, and we couldn't take pictures, and then my neighbor Sue gave us her camera. And I was kind of grumbling about that. I asked him to do this. He does a ton. And then, just to show me, like a couple days later, you know, frustrated with our son, with he's a good kid, but just I feel like he's throwing gifts away. Gifts that he's been given and he can share. And so, and it was a Sunday night and in church, and my husband's like, you know, I'll talk to him. And the way he talked to him, me, it would have been, you did this, and it would have been arguing the theme that I didn't like. And with my husband, it was like, you know, we really love you, and we're our parents, and, you know, you're only going to be with us a little time longer, and it's our job to really show you what we think, and you trust us. And it was a whole different talk, and I'm just sitting there listening and learning, you know, thinking, boy,
way, I'm so glad to have him and have his perspective, because I'm the nitpicky, I'm just going to say, how could you not do this? Or how come you don't like playing a church band? And he came home from church that night saying, you know, because I had reached the point, he kind of complains about having to play in church band. And then we reached the point where we're not going to make him do it anymore. He's halfway through his senior year. And he came home from church and said, well, Mom, I know I don't like it, but the group would fall apart. They really need me.
Wow.
Because, and even in church, Paul said, he sounded, and he always sounds great. And I'm like, this is a gift that he's not cherishing. I want him to be the kid that goes, I'm in church band, and I love playing in church band.
But that would be your picture.
That would be my picture.
Yes.
He complained. So finally, the complaining, we're tired of it, and we thought, we can't force him to do these things if this isn't his heart. He's almost 18. We're just, so at the end of church, Paul's like, did you hear Michael? He sounded really good. I go, yeah, but he's not going to be in it after tonight. And what I said, because that's what we were going to tell him after church, that he can choose. So Paul was having this talk, and of course, church band comes up, and for the main people in this church band, the leaders left all at once. And so Michael really is one of the ones who knows the music, because he's been in it now for 3 years. And so we're like, you know, that's fine. If, you know, he did, and he's never said he's enjoyed it all those years. But anyways, during the talk, he goes, oh, well, no, I'm not going to leave church band because they really do need me.
Wow!
So I'm telling
most of the time the kids just want to have the choice.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Even if that's you think you're forcing
them. Well,
we gave
them
a choice.
We did.
Then they
gave them a choice.
It. Their choice, not your choice.
Well, it wasn't our choice. We just said, well, you need to do something, so why don't you pick? And he says, okay, I'll do church band. We didn't say you had to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you chose that. And so anyway, but in all of this, it's just,
wow.
Yeah.
A lot of God.
If I were saying, Carmel, you know, what could you dream? I mean, you would, I mean, that's amazing.
And for me, I'm like, here I am in church saying, well, he'll never be in this again.
Yeah, good point. I'm going to do one thing. I'm going, because I want to shut down the tape so that it doesn't go for 3 hours. And then we'll continue talking. So I usually end with a prayer on the tape because I don't have the prayer at the beginning. So let me pray, and then we'll continue. Father, thank you for, for allowing even our own words to be the places that you will show us that you're going to provide for us war, battle against the flesh. Mm-hmm. Father, there is much of us that says, I don't want to be controlled by my flesh. I don't want to idolize my own plan and picture, my own timing. And yet there are days that I do. There are many, many days that I do. And I pray that this week that you would make us listen not only to your words, but to our own. That we would hear where we grumble. That we would be aware of the places that we are controlled by our flesh. And that we would be willing to battle under your banner those places of flesh, so that we might be able to have the peace of your rhythm and not ours. Father, I thank you for your words. I pray that your words would be a part of us and not just in our head. May our heart be enlarged because of your words, and may we be, like Moses, so full of your story that we are ready to share it when you bring someone to us. In Jesus' name, amen.